Welcome to Days of Update for July 21st, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And Jan Red Victoria.
And yeah, we've got another week of games to talk about and some news as well. Some interesting news here. Not a ton of major news, but we have a couple of games selling pretty well. We got legal stuff happening. We got a couple games being announced, a few games, especially one that we saw a teaser for last week that turned out to be in a different direction than you might have thought. As well as a few games here coming out over the next week or two or so. But yeah, before we get to that stuff, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And yeah, there's been a lot. So I'll kick it off here. I've been playing a good bit of College Football 25. I have it on the Xbox. And yeah, I would say it's a good game that feels like it was rushed to launch. Because it feels like a game that's missing a lot of things you would expect, things that were in, you know, the last game. Obviously they're kind of building from scratch a bit, but I would say that's not really a great excuse for what they're doing here, since they're, you know, selling it for a full $70 or, you know, $90 to $100 if you bought the deluxe edition to play it early. So yeah, kind of it's centered around the three main modes: your Ultimate Team, Road to Glory, which is your career mode, and Dynasty, which is your sort of franchise mode. The career mode's probably the best of the bunch, though I definitely have some issues with it. I created a quarterback that they give you different like archetypes you could pick that generally determines like what sort of starting stats you start with. So you can be sort of a superstar freshman kind of thing with really high stats, or, you know, be somebody that's more of a project that kind of has to work their way up, and you probably want to with that kind of thing pick like a smaller school and see how you can kind of change things there. So I ended up picking that and going to Northwestern in the Big Ten, who had me set up as going to be the second string quarterback, the backup, which immediately got challenged to a position battle, essentially by the third string quarterback, which had me play three mini games that I had never played before. So, of course, I lost out and got benched to the third spot out of the gates. But that was probably a decent idea. I ended up getting redshirted as I'm in the second season as a redshirt freshman. And I have taken the top spot mainly because the two guys that were ahead of me were seniors. So then they essentially brought in, so there were five quarterbacks technically. So the other two kind of immediately leapfrogged me, even though I had higher points. There's like a point system called Coach's Trust. I had higher points than them, so immediately challenged at least the second string guy and became the immediate backup and was not too far behind the starter. So I managed to take over the starting spot after the first two games, which they lost pretty badly in both of them. So that made it easier because I believe their trust goes down. So it kind of works out in my favor, but by that point, I had played at least a few of those mini games a number of times, so I kind of understood it. So there's one that I still don't this day understand. It's like a scramble drill. I've never been able to understand that one, but every other one I've played pretty well, and I can beat it just has you beat the same stats, the score out of it, that not that high out of it. So it's not really too hard to win those now. At least for the quarterback. I don't know what the other positions have for that stuff. But, yeah, so now I'm the starter, and you are essentially playing with the AI picking the plays for you, which as a freshman means they're kind of doing a lot of rushing plays, but also making a lot of weird choices at times, like a lot of, like, RPO, which is run-pass offense, which as far as I've seen, whenever I've tried to pass, turn it into a pass play, I always get called for a player, illegal player downfield. I don't know what's up with that. So now I've just started just letting it stay run and not really trying to change it in any way. But yeah, I've been doing pretty decently. I've got Northwestern at 5-4 right now, 4-2 record in the conference. So doing pretty well on that front. But yeah, the there's a lot of like details issues that I kind of have. So you get, you know, coaches trust points out of, you know, all your plays, you know, completing passes, long passes, you know, incompletes, all that kind of stuff you can gain or lose points on. And I've had them be assigned erratically where I've thrown an incompletion but got points for both an incomplete pass and a completed pass at the same time. And it's like, these seems like there's plenty of bugs in here. And, you know, the running backs aren't always super great. They love to go different ways than they're, you would expect them to be, which is a whatever thing, but the play calling doesn't always make a sense a lot of times, because we'll go into obvious pass situations and get run plays called for me. But at the point I am at, I have the ability to kind of pull out of the one play and see what the full set of three options are. And so that can let me pull out of a passing play that I don't like or a running play I don't like and see if there are other options. And usually there are, but sometimes it's like, oh, do I have another pass play here? And no, they're all run plays, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of issues there on that front of feeling like the play calling could be better. Maybe that stuff will get fixed here in the next few weeks or whatever. But other issues include seeing the lack of stats being available to you most of the time. Like when you see the Heisman list, the watch list, that's like, here's like the five best players in the country. You can't see their season stats anywhere. There's no like page for their stat profile. Essentially, we can see like their stats for the previous years and their current year, that kind of stuff. You can't really see any of that. You can't bring up any sort of profile page for that. But all you get to see is their stats were from the previous game. And there's like a little panel on the right side that has some information, but it's all like recruiting information or like their character stats, their player stats, like overall rating and a couple of things like that. But it's not really anything that's all that useful for these parts of the mode. You have to go all the way to a stats section to pull up like season stats, career stats, that kind of stuff. And that's kind of a thing, just feels like a thing that happens because you're rushing things for launch and not able to do everything. Because I'm pretty sure Madden has this. I can look at the last NCAA football game that has this. So there's not really any history here that shows that this is not a thing to expect out of a game like this. But yeah, you get the nice thing to do that kind of makes the week-to-week grind, especially if you're not a starter, more bearables. You have kind of a weekly agenda where you have energy points to put into your different parts of your activities, like studying or doing leadership stuff on the team, training, healing up, as well as some social media type stuff, which that can lead to your ability to take on NIL deals, which I've gotten a couple of those, but not really that much, which I don't know if that's because maybe my overall stats aren't super great, but as you gain experience points, you level up and you get skill points out of that that you can apply to your upgrading your stats, which are in certain categories of things that are linked together, like IQ and throwing accuracy and all that kind of stuff. So, and those can require more points as you upgrade them. So that can take a good bit to upgrade. Though it was weird when, after, you know, just simming through games, you get a bunch of experience points some weeks and nothing other weeks. So it was kind of a weird experience dealing with that kind of stuff. But that's still been pretty fun, especially because you get a lot of satisfaction out of taking a player that's not highly skilled and beating some of the better teams. Though I'm getting some weird things there, even where I'm just either playing poorly, which is probably most of it, and sometimes just getting bad luck, where the defense is either sometimes unable to stop the other team or always able to stop the other team. So you get some lopsided games like that, even though you're playing games that you should trounce or should have closer games with. But so that's been a fun mode. Dynasty is probably the one that's been the most surprising in that it's pretty solid still. You pick a team, do all that. They don't seem to have any of the actual coaches in this game. When I started with like Ohio State, it did not have Ryan Day as an option for the coach, so I made my own. They do have stock ones that are just generic coaches, but I made my own. And the character creation for the coaches is really poor. You essentially are just picking from up to 500 different head styles. That determines your skin color and that, but you can't set hair color or anything. It's like the same, you know, maybe a few dozen sets of heads, but with different hair color styles to them. But I'm not going to sit here and come through, you know, 500 different heads to find the one of the specific ones. So I just picked one. The only other things you can edit is the height and weight of your coach, which I made a 7-foot giant because that's what it allows you to do, I guess. Anywhere from 5 feet to 7 feet, or 5'5" to 7 feet. And then you have two styles of like shirt or jacket to wear, and that's it. When you're making your Road to Glory character, your player, you got tons of options. The head stuff is maybe not as detailed. It's like three dozen types of heads. There's like two big ones and a bunch of that are just normal sized heads. So I picked a big head there, which has weird jawline stuff. It's like the jaw is underneath where the beard is, below the beard, which looks really bad, especially if you decide to mess with the jawline stuff and you make it look like a monster. But yeah, they let you kind of mess with the head and that kind of stuff. Not too much because it still has to fit under a helmet. But for my career mode player, I picked all the vintage gear. I can post a picture of what he looks like. But there was a point where I could pick different gear for your elbows and your wrists. And they had a wrist gear that's like an arm wrap. And then I used the typical kind of playbook armbands that flash on this in a pretty cool way. It just looks real stupid, but yeah, my guy has a very specific look to him. But for the coach, it's like super generic. I don't even think I ever really see him because he's should be a 7-foot giant that's obvious to see, but I don't think I ever really see it too much when I'm playing with my Ohio State team, which I've been playing on the varsity difficulty. I think it's the second of the four. Mainly because in the early parts of the game, it's not, it's nicely not too hard, especially when you're playing a bunch of the bad teams. So that kind of fits it pretty well. But yeah, let me see. Here's a good picture of that for the Discord chat here that you can see. I also picked a good beard. There's not really any great beard options. They're just a bunch of like shitty beards really. But I picked one where he has like a bushy beard but also like waxed mustache kind of thing, like twirled up a little bit kind of thing. So but yeah, the dynasty mode has a lot of issues as well. You kind of end up seeing a lot of random results for the simulation, so a lot of teams get upset by the weirdest games, which happens sometimes, but it seems like it happens more and more, and especially as you get later. I've seen a lot of people talking about how they had teams that are like 7-5 and managed to make it into the college football playoffs, which seems like either every other team's got to be a huge shit show or nobody is actually good or whatever, but it has seems like there's a lot of issues with the general simulation of the other teams, kind of keeping them in line with where you're going to be, because a lot of the schools are kind of rated pretty similarly, which, you know, is a good sign of, you know, parity, general parity, but there's a lot of schools that are not anywhere close to like a good half of the top schools in the country, kind of thing. So you end up with a lot of weird stuff going on. And similarly, you can't see stats for, you know, who's leading the Heisman, all that kind of stuff. So you end up with a bunch of people. You're like, I don't know if they're any good. They had one good game, I guess. You can look at the player of the week and kind of get an idea of some of that stuff. But once you start getting to, you know, awards finalists, stuff going on, and all this, you're just like, this seems like there's a lot of details that should have been here at launch, and maybe they'll get them here in the next few weeks. But if not, it kind of really makes this game look like a solid gameplay game, a very good gameplay game, but one that suffers a lot on the details and the that kind of stuff, because everything in the game works out pretty well. But you get a lot of the stuff that's around the edges and in the menus of what you're doing here that's kind of feels rushed and undercooked and maybe not even really thought of too much. But yeah, like the recruiting is weird in this year's game. You don't really spend points on players in the way that you would in the most of the games recently in this series, where you'd have like X amount of points to spend on your players as time. And the way I would do it is I would just split them pretty evenly, and as people would commit to my school or to other schools, I would reallocate them accordingly, that kind of stuff. Which with my Ohio State dynasty, I had two guys that committed immediately, and so that was nice. But now they show up at under, they have different categories of the players that you can organize them by, and it's like fully scouted, which none of those two are the only ones that show up there, because they committed before I really scouted them. There's like weird stuff like that, and it's really hard to parse what's going on, because you're spending points to scout them, which that stuff replenishes every week. But then you're also committing points to the player every week based on things like contacting them on social media, contacting friends and family, like going all out in recruiting them. And at a certain point, that does not explain any of this stuff well. So it kind of just becomes kind of a thing that you just kind of screw around with and try and figure out for yourself. Otherwise, it just seems like a really confusing thing that I just end up having the CPU kind of handle on its own, which just makes for a really weird thing, because it was pretty straightforward before, just very slow and tedious kind of thing. And here it's still kind of tedious and slow. Seems like they've tried to make it a little bit smoother and faster and simpler, but it kind of just leaves a bad taste as just kind of a half-baked kind of idea there. So you end up seeing a lot of players that you're surprised that don't want to go to Ohio State, don't have them ranked highly, that kind of stuff, which happens. But also, like, during, as you're playing the season, you're kind of seeing a lot of players that you're getting, like, an update of, like, these players are considering transferring, you know, whenever that becomes available, that kind of stuff. So you're kind of trying to keep an eye on, you know, playing time and all that kind of stuff to see if you can do anything about that, or if you just, like, well, we'll let the chips fall as they may. So that's kind of the weird thing there. But yeah, in game, all the stuff is pretty cool. They have a lot of the traditional, you know, intros that teams have on their on their home fields, that kind of stuff, which, yeah, for Ohio State, they have, like, the Script Ohio stuff with the band doing that, and the one special bandmate that gets to dot the I, that kind of stuff. And that stuff's pretty cool, though you can't skip any of it, at least not as quickly as you might want to. So, like, when I was simulating stuff in the career mode as a backup that's never going to play, I had to watch that stuff every time. And, like, I think the first game I simulated through, my player showed up as, like, in the celebration, like he was the starting quarterback, even though it was the third-string quarterback, which didn't happen again, but it's, like, a lot of weird stuff like that that can happen. But it really needs ways to kind of skip that stuff, because sometimes you're in a hurry for things and you just want to move through after you've seen the Script Ohio kind of thing, you know, 4 or 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just want to skip through it, and this game does not like to let you do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, there's that for the Dynasty, which feels pretty all right, but fairly shaky in some aspects of it. And then there's Ultimate Team, which is actually where the tutorial is, the gameplay tutorial. It teaches you the various concepts of how you're playing the passing game, the rushing defense, all that kind of stuff. Because, yeah, there's some mechanics that are largely the same as what, like, recent Maddens have been, probably tweaked to be a bit better in a lot of ways, especially to be more flexible, because there's a variety of ways that teams are playing the game in college football versus the NFL, where kind of largely the same for most teams. But yeah, Ultimate Team, that's where they put a lot of the tutorial stuff at, probably to try to get people hooked into Ultimate Team and spend the money there, because that's the only part of the game where you're really able to spend any money on it beyond what the cost of the game is. But yeah, and all that stuff is pretty boring. Though it's weird that there are, like, passing challenges, like, you know, doing lob passes and that kind of stuff, and it puts you at the 10-yard line where you have very little room to do those kind of passes. So I would end up failing a lot of challenges because I'm like, I don't know how to get this, especially when it's picking plays for you and that kind of stuff. And so sometimes they give me a run play when it's telling me to do a lob pass, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck you're doing, game, but this is not how you make this fun. And it ends up just making that all be pretty boring. And as I had the deluxe edition, I got paid currency that's like $50 worth of it, and I don't know what to spend it on because nothing there really seems all that interesting. It's just, you know, packs of cards and such, and these games do a really good job of making that all sound like probably an okay way to spend money right now, but what sort of return do you get on it and all that? And it's like, I'm not going to put more money into it. So now I'm like, well, I got a specific amount of money that now I'm going to want to spend all of it and not have anything left over, that kind of stuff. And Ultimate Team's probably been the buggiest mode of all. In the early access period, it crashed a lot of times where it would just literally boot you out of the mode. Even when I was trying to do basic things like filling out sets, which just involves you trying to pick cards out of your collection to put into these sets to fill them out, it would literally just lose connection and kick me out, make me do the long string of, you know, button presses to do it again, and be very annoying. And I've had other times where it's loading into the next challenge to do, and it just loads forever until I quit out of the game and reload it again. That kind of stuff. And it's which does not make me want to spend any money on that part of the mode when it's just a buggy, boring mess of a game. And it's real annoying because since I picked my favorite team as Ohio State, it gives me, you know, the Ohio State uniforms. But part of the things they gave you early on is this alternate team that's called, I forget what it's called, it's like All Glory Football, something like that. Every time I have it pick the best rosters, fill out the best players, it defaults back to those uniforms, which are all black and impossible to get any detail out of. So then I have to go to the visual part of the lineup and set it back to Ohio State. And it's like, why can't I just set these as the defaults and change everything else? Why are these uniforms the best rated or whatever? Why does it keep getting set as the default? It makes me want to sell those uniforms just to stop this from happening. But yeah, that's Ultimate Team, and that's just like a probably par for the course for those modes. I think they're now adding challenges or like recovering stuff that's happened since the last game came out, kind of thing. So they're doing some of that kind of retro stuff for it. And yeah, it's an all right mode, but yeah. For the game itself, I would say it's a very good game that has a lot of issues to work out. A lot of nitpicks that I can continue to put out there. And yeah, it's a game that still is a lot of fun to play when I got the time for it. But yeah, it's that's it. It's only on the new consoles, and I think that's going to mean that a lot of people are spending money on the console, you know, a new console and the game.
Mm-hmm.
I expect that Sabar would be the best-selling game of the month and maybe one of the best-selling of the year because it seems like it's doing very well. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But, yeah, that's College Football 25. What we're checking out if you like the old games, but you probably also have plenty of nitpicks and issues with it because it seems like everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of simulation stuff, coaching logic, and just missing issues that really could be better. So hopefully they put the work into making that stuff better and kind of giving people a better feeling for where this thing is going in the future. Mm. So yeah, there you go. That's College Football 25. Mm. For other things I've been playing, Dungeons and Hinterberg. This is on Xbox and PC, also on Game Pass. From a studio that is in Austria, making their, I think, their first game. And yeah, it's a pretty cool game. Basically set in the town of Hinterberg, which is a town that has where magic has been discovered. And so as a result, it's turned into a tourist town of sorts, where you are dealing with these like dungeons that have shown up. And so it's kind of this touristy sort of thing where people come in, they sort of learn how to become a slayer, which is what it's called, as you're fighting monsters and solving puzzles and completing these dungeons in like a touristy fashion. And you're playing a character named Luisa who works as like a lawyer or something. I forget what her specific job was, but she's become kind of bored of it and decided to come to this town and deal with trying, you know, try out this slayer thing and see how that goes for her. And so it kind of has a daily framework of like a Persona game where you have like a little morning intro thing that you're usually talking to people. I'm 4 days in. I think they're talking about this being like a 3-week vacation, but I think you have more time than that because I'm assuming at a certain point she decides to stick around for a while. But yeah, you kind of show up at your hotel. It's not quite ready, and you sort of meet up with one of the tourist information people that is going to help you get set up for running these dungeons, and they run you through the early dungeon, beginner dungeon, which is pretty easy, but then also they have a whole thing that happens where this earthquake happens in there, which is the first time that anything like that has ever happened. Causes the ground to shake and get destroyed, and as you're like running out of there, you know, almost Indiana Jones style, to get out of there, and as a result they kind of shut down a bunch of the dungeons and seeming like a way to just basically have it be a way to kind of gauge your progress. You can't necessarily get too far ahead of them, but yeah, once you get out of the first dungeon, you kind of have a free night to kind of go around and do stuff. They do mention a few people that you've met throughout this process. So you kind of have like a journalist dude that's doing photojournalism around these things, who kind of hates the idea of actually doing them. Mm. And so he kind of offers to feature you in this piece that he's doing and kind of getting the vibes from you of what it's like to go through these dungeons, that kind of stuff, as well as, you know, some locals and some other people that have some fun stuff to add to your experience as they show in the, you get a little compendium of all the people, and you can see specifically as you hang out with them, you level them up and you get specific rewards for it. Some are pure stat stuff and others will unlock features. So like I've unlocked the ability to kind of do the smithy stuff, which kind of adds new magic powers to you that are kind of more universal, but they are they're on cooldowns essentially, so you kind of have to keep an eye that you don't use them all right away when you need them, but probably do need to manage that stuff. But the neat thing they do is there's like four regions in this town, in the surrounding area, that has all these dungeons, and the magic is different between them. So you have magic abilities in the first area you go to. I forget what it's called. It's called like Kobol or something like that. That has a bunch of the early dungeons, and they rank them from like 1 to, I think 7's the highest I've seen so far. I've been working my way through all the 1 dungeons. I'm in the middle of one right now. I'm trying to do a quest that's outside of the dungeon to bring all of these monster parts to these people, and I can get some stuff out of that. So I'm just kind of running around and grinding out that stuff. It's not really an RPG. It's more RPG in the sense that they kind of upgrade your gear. You kind of get better capability to take on higher tier dungeon stuff. But right now in the early games, they're kind of still introducing new people that, you know, open up more things to do and ways to make money and expand and upgrade your gear, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where I'm at. But it's been really cool so far. The dungeons, the 3 dungeons I've done so far have been all fairly different. The first one's kind of more tutorial and combat focused. Then I did one that was more heavy on the puzzle stuff, where you're kind of using this ability you have for to pull these like gels that are kind of switches essentially. So you're kind of using them to create platforms, extend platforms, you know, do whatever you need to get around, and use a machinery to manipulate that stuff and kind of finding ways to get around. Not super dynamic, but it is pretty well done. And I have, I have one person I particularly need to hang out with, because I found some locked treasure chests, and if I hang out with her once, I get the ability to unlock these chests. So that'll be nice, though. I think going into dungeons, you waste one of your, you know, you're essentially going to advance time as soon as you get out of it. So I've seen one that's at least in one of the dungeons, so I need to figure out what's going on there. But I assume you get plenty of time to do them all. It's not like you have to get through all of them by the end of the trip, so I don't think you have to rush anything there. But it's got a really nice style to it. It's got really good vibes to it. The combat's pretty good, and it's been expanding as I'm going, so I'm excited to play some more of that. And yeah, that's a very cool game. So definitely recommend it if you're on Xbox or PC, and if you also have Game Pass. So that's one that's worth checking out, Dungeons in Hinterburg. Also been playing some other stuff on PS5, Ratchet and Clank Size Matters. It's the PSP Ratchet and Clank game that I like a good bit. I've been playing that on there. I'm maybe about halfway into the game, maybe a little further than that. But it's doing some neat stuff in terms of playing with the formula, like Ratchet gets captured and put into some experimentation stuff. Along the way, you're kind of dreaming, and it has this neat little effect to the screen that kind of obscures a lot of what's going on, but also features a lot of characters just doing weird stuff in locations from the early games that you're kind of revisiting. So there's some cool stuff there. But yeah, I'm enjoying that a lot. The biggest knock really against it is same to a lot of those early Ratchet and Clank games, which is the side stuff is not all that great and tends to not control that well. There's a racing racing thing going on that does not control well, especially with the controls being separated between movement and strafing, depending on how you have that set up on the controls end, that can make that stuff harder for that. Then there's a bunch of mini games for Clank to do.
Mm-hmm.
One of which is like a sports game where you're throwing the robots that Clank can order around mm-hmm. Into goals. That is not that hard to beat the other guys because their AI is pretty bad at it. There's a construction derby mode, which is a bit tougher just because of the randomness of what the other enemies do.
Mm-hmm.
But with the rewind and all that, you can get around it pretty easily. And the last one was kind of a Lemmings-esque kind of thing where you're watching those same like robots going around on these little platform things, and you're picking different abilities to use to have them, you know, get across gaps or get down safely and get to where the goal is, and it's not too hard. Like four of each of those things, so I just stopped what I was doing and did that stuff, so nothing really too complicated. And yeah, the story, similar to previous games where Ratchet and Clank are led on this adventure and then find out a certain person lied to them and is actually the bad guy. And then you probably find out there's more bad guy stuff going on. So yeah, that's still a pretty good, solid game. Then I played a good hour or so of Jeanne d'Arc, which is a strategy RPG made by Level 5.
Mm-hmm.
That takes the story of Joan of Arc,
mm-hmm.
a legendary, you know, figure in French history that they decided to make anime as hell.
And not the first time. The TV Tropes even has a thing. They call it the Jeanne d'Arc archetype, because that particular archetype comes up so often in anime.
Yeah. So. But yeah, this one, what is it? The Prince Philip, I think it is. I forget which kid it is, but that is going to be the king of England. His uncle, he was a real evil looking guy, so surprise, surprise, he's evil. Makes a pact with the demons to be their army and procure their power, and then uses them along with the English army to fight back the French, who, you know, Joan of Arc's village gets ransacked by these demons and Englishmen, and she ends up setting off to kill all the Englishmen, as she is kind of getting this weird voice in her head, and she, you know, goes with her buddies and tries to convince people that, you know, she's there by the grace of God, destined to lead the French army to victory. And they don't really believe her, so they give her a couple people from the army to kind of help her out, do what she is trying to do, at least help some people out in the countryside and all that. And so those are kind of all your missions. I think I'm going to enjoy this game a lot, because having the rewind and save states means you can kind of get around some of the random bullshit more easily, so that if you are maybe not sure what you're doing with your moves, you can kind of try them out and see, like, oh, that didn't work, I'll rewind and figure out what's better, that kind of stuff. So I've definitely run into some situations where I've gotten people killed and been able to rewind and kind of rethink things a bit. Because when characters die, they don't get XP out of it, but you get XP out of every attack you do. So you're kind of trying to make the most of everything and not let people die. Otherwise, they start falling behind. I had, like, one character who, even in her state, could only do like 3 or 4 points of damage. So I managed to set up a scenario where somebody had like 1 point hit point left, and I was like, all right, let's get this girl over here. She's going to kill him and get a bunch of XP. And she leveled up like twice in that one encounter. So, but yeah, even like in that hour, I've had a handful of anime scenes, which, yeah, it's just ridiculous every time you see them. But yeah, it's a very fun strategy RPG. Maybe one that doesn't, go the distance super well, but you know, with the rewind and save states, you can probably make that a bit easier, especially because I think I'm the one that reviewed it originally on what was Gamer 2.0 back then. I never remember that kind of being an issue when you're, especially when you're trying to play it for review. They definitely tell you, like, hey, if you need to, you can just sit here and do some of these different scenarios over and over again and kind of grind a bit, which would be more useful when you're just playing for fun now. But yeah, back then you're kind of just pushing through, and definitely feels like there would be opportunities for you to run into walls, essentially, where your people just aren't strong enough, and having the time to go back through scenarios a bit easier this time around. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna try and play some more of this, but yeah, really good stuff so far. Then the other game I'm playing is out now. It's called Asphalt Legends Unite. I think this has been out on Switch and Xbox for a good bit now, but now they finally released on PlayStation 5 and PlayStation 4. This is basically a mobile racing game, so you end up with a lot of races that are very short, maybe like 20, 30 seconds short. Not really too much in the way of just doing a few laps with that stuff. So yeah, it kind of makes it feel very superfluous, but yeah, it's still a fun time, as far as there's not too many big, you know, arcade racing games anymore, much less ones that are going for some really good visual stuff that this game is doing here. But yeah, definitely recommend just playing it at the pace that it wants for being free to play versus the one it wants you to play to pay them money. There's plenty of ways that it does that. You have like six times you can race with a car before it's out of gas and it has to, you know, sit for like 12, 15 minutes to refill. And they require you to collect cards to upgrade these vehicles. They can only be upgraded so much until you get them to the next level kind of thing. And you have to do through these cards, and they give you a couple packs every few hours. So that's the kind of thing that's real annoying. But there's a lot of free content to this game, but yeah, you gotta have to do a decent bit of grinding to get to it. There's special event stuff that you have to get like 120 cards or flags in, which flags are objective completions in races. A lot of them just give you one for beating it, but once you get further in, it starts giving you other objectives for, you know, doing tricks or finishing first, using boost a bunch of times, you know, that kind of stuff. That'll get you more, but it'll definitely take you some time to do that. But yeah, it's a pretty solid racing game for all that. But yeah, it definitely feels like a, you know, a console port of a mobile racing game, which it is. So there's that. And the last thing is I got a new PS5. I traded in my launch PS5 that had been giving me a lot of issues, especially making it hard to play PS5 games, as it liked to crash on PS5 games, though it would not crash on PS4 games, which is where I could tell there was definitely some issue with the PS5 itself. Not necessarily the games being crash heavy, but when these crashes would happen, it would essentially turn off the console, and I would have to unplug it for a few seconds and then plug it in to be able to turn it on. And that's pretty annoying, especially if you have to do all the thing where it's repairing its databases and all that stuff for it. But otherwise, the process of moving over was pretty easy, as I pulled up my NVMe drive, SSD drive out of it, as well as my external drive that's for the PS4 games. Yeah. And all that stuff showed up as I put it back into the new system. This is the slim PS5, which by default has 1 terabyte in it, versus the 825 I think the original had, so I have a bit more space in there. And yeah, the way they have the splits, like fins on the side, actually are pretty easy to get off, which works out pretty nicely for putting in a new NVMe SSD for that. So, because it kind of just pops off versus the original PS5, where you kind of have to twist it a little bit in a weird way. That's a bit weird at first, but once you get used to it, it's not too bad. But here, it's kind of bit of a smart little system there. The one big change they make to it is that you don't have a stand. It's like these two little plastic legs you essentially stick in there between where the two fins are on the one side that kind of prop it up, help prop it up. But otherwise, setting it up was all pretty easy. And so, yeah, I was spending yesterday kind of downloading a bunch of stuff to the internal hard drive to build up. But yeah, that's pretty nice. I was kind of hoping that I could hold out for the PS5 Pro that's supposedly coming out this year, but this will be at least a decent alternate for the time being until the next thing, until they have something else to announce before I think about trading this in for that. But at least now I'll be able to play PS5 games more reliably, so that's great for me. So, but yeah. That's it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, as for me, I am still thoroughly barreling through Trails Through Daybreak. Or is it Trails Into Daybreak? I don't know why I keep calling it Trails Through Daybreak for some reason. I don't know why. But
it actually is Trails Through Daybreak.
Okay, yeah. All right, yeah, so it is Trails Through Daybreak. I'm sorry, I'm absolutely... Anyway, point is, I'm still playing it. I'm in the middle of Chapter 5 right now, so I'm getting fairly close to the end, I think, or at least what the game is telling me is the end. And, yeah, it's fascinating when you get to this part of the game, because this part of the game basically takes place entirely in a city in the northern part of Kalvar called Oracion, and it is a... basically, it was the original capital when Kalvard was still a monarchy before the revolution happened, and they moved the capital to Edith. And it's a neat place because on the one hand, you can tell it's a very old city because they keep a lot of the old buildings around. It's of all the European-ish places in this game, this is the one that looks the most European. They've got like a huge royal palace that's still kind of intact. They've got the enormous cathedral that's there and all this other stuff. And it's just really cool. The other thing about the city is that a lot of the people that live there are the descendants of the old nobility. And as you can imagine, there's still some of them that hold a bit of a grudge against the modern, you know, democratic government. And in particular, a lot of them are also super duper racist against immigrants. And two of the big guys you come in contact with this game are, in fact, part of that particular anti-immigrant movement. One of them is a demagogue that does, like, speeches in the middle of the street that you end up coming in contact with because he's basically he's sending threatening letters to a high school girl who is of, quote-unquote, Central Eastern descent, who's going to be on stage of their historic opera house. And I won't mention who the other one is, because it's a big plot point, but they're also there. And, yeah, it goes a lot more in depth into the sort of racial politics of the Republic and the sort of lingering, resentment that a lot of the sort of descendants of the old aristocracy still have. And yeah, it's just really cool. We also get a little bit more sort of info on an organization that showed up in the last game, Trails Into Reverie, which was the Gardens. We find out who specifically they are and what it is they do. Yeah, that's about it. Really loving it. Still having tons of fun. And I'm just glad that we're going to be able to play the next game early next year. So we don't have that long to wait. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan Reb, what about you?
Yeah, happy to hear it, man. It sounds like you've reached the point where the shit really hit the fan in that game.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I really love about the series is every so often, they'll have it where, like, real-world science decides to poke its head into this fantasy world. and that is directly related to what happens in this game. So, yeah, I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, no worries. Happy to hear it. Anyway, for me, the game of I've been playing a whole lot of different kinds of games after going through the 100 hours that I spent on Trails. So, you know, it's been about me just trying to find which one clicked. And I think I found it. So that game is Kunitsugami, Path of the Goddess. This game is developed by Capcom, and it's like one of those things that we saw like earlier this year. And, you know, we saw it a couple times and didn't actually know what it was. And I finally got a chance to play it during Summer Game Fest. And even though, you know, I went through that whole demo experience not really knowing what I was doing, it was one thing that clicked, and it was definitely the best thing I played there. So this game came out on Friday. If you have Xbox Game Pass, it's available there. I did get a code, so I'm playing on PlayStation. And basically, this game is a tower defense game. Tower defense game, except with a little bit of more action-style combat gameplay. So basically, you play as this warrior who has to defend this goddess from all sorts of bad things happening. And the point of every map is to get her from the beginning of the map to the very end so that she can call away all the bad spirits and really cleanse that land that's there. And you make your way down the mountain. So, you know, you start at the top at the very beginning of the game, and as you get through each level, you get further and further down the mountain. So I am on the third level, which is funny because that's pretty much where the demo ended. So I'm pretty much getting into the meat of the real game now. And so again, like, you have to get the girl from the start of the level to the end as time passes. Thing is, though, once night falls, that's where, you know, darkness really comes, and you have to just kill everything on sight. And, you know, in addition to the warrior that you're using, you also have to use the villagers that are, like, sort of trapped in the darkness and the rot. So you have to go through the entire map, find these villagers, and save them. It's pretty simple. You just go there, hold a circle, and then all of a sudden they're cleansed. And then from there, you can choose their class. So you have the woodsman, which gives them an axe. You have the archer, which gives them a bow and arrow. And then you have a couple other classes. I forget what the third one is called, but they have the ability to slow down the enemies. So, you know, you want to be able to position these units strategically. Sometimes you have up to four allies to use in a single level. And, you know, you want to be able to prepare the level in such a way where, like, once night falls, you know, you're able to just go ahead and attack everything on sight. So you'll be doing things like, you know, breaking pots. You'll be chopping down weeds. Also, you can get these orbs that allow you to make your princess travel farther in the level. And so once night falls again, like, it becomes about just protecting her, because they'll all be trying to kill her. And if she dies, it's game over. If you die, you actually turn into a ghost for about a minute. And during this time, you still have the ability to control the various units on the field. But you still have to wait until your character is actually revived before you can actually help out in any meaningful way. So, you know, you do that, and, you know, all of a sudden the level's over, and, you know, you move on from there. So after you beat every level, there's also a boss level right after that. And basically, you pretty much use all of the tools that you've learned from the previous level. So the first level was more of a tutorial. It teaches you how to do things, and there was only one class available, the woodsman. The second level, you know, introduced the archer. So, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of enemies that are flying higher. The woodsman and you can't reach them all that well, but the archers can. And then the third level took us through a cavern where it's all dark, and you have to use your unit sparingly. You know, some of them have to light up these torches so that they're able to see all of the enemies coming by as well when it's nighttime. And, you know, if you don't light them up, then they won't be able to see, and you'll be on your own. So you want to be able to use your units effectively. And so this is where I'm having trouble. I beat that third level, but then on the boss level, I've been having crazy trouble. I'm going against this centipede, and whenever he has a chance at going at my princess, all it takes is two hits and she dies. And that's been really hard for me at that point. So what I've been doing was I've been playing some of these levels over and over so I can get some more resources so I can level up each of the classes that I have. And I think I have a new strategy now. I've upgraded my woodsman to the highest level so that they have more HP and they have more attack. And we'll see how that goes. But I've already died 3 times. And, you know, it's that typical Capcom cheap gameplay where you don't know what's wrong until you find out what is wrong. And then, you know, once you figure it out, it becomes second nature from there. But yeah, so far I'm really enjoying what I've been playing. And I look forward to getting further into it. A friend of mine over at Temple of Geek said that he got the code last week and he beat it at around 15 hours. And that's about the sweet spot for me. So I'm hoping I can actually achieve the same success. Next up, I've been playing Flock. Flock came out early last week. This is another game that I played at Summer Game Fest. And it's clicked, but I don't know if it's a game that I want to bother finishing. So, you know, it has that nice indie cartoony art style. You pretty much are riding on this bird and you're looking throughout the world for various creatures. And that's basically what it is. It's a flight and creature finding simulator. And if I were to compare it to anything, it would probably be Pokemon Snap, except that, you know, you don't take pictures. You're just like finding these animals and, you know, sort of coexisting with them in their various habitats and whatnot. And yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I think the main point of the game is finding all of them. There are divine. And the thing is, this is also a multiplayer game, so I've never actually made use of the multiplayer component. I plan on trying that out sometime this week and seeing if that actually changes my opinion of the game so far. But yeah, so far, like, it's been nice to travel around, but I just don't really find the pull to be all that interesting. I've also been playing a few betas, one of them being Valorant. You know, I got the code for that a couple weeks ago, trying to get better at the game. I haven't spent any of the resources to try other characters, but, you know, I'm also trying to learn the characters that are currently in the game. The one that I like a lot is, I think his name is Phoenix. Yeah, he's the guy that has a whole bunch of firewalls and whatnot. And, yeah, I've spent most of my time in Deathmatch just so I can, like, figure out how to, like, you know, properly use them for the purpose of combat. A lot of what makes Valorant interesting is, you know, being able to choose your loadouts right when you come out. And then, you know, each time you die and as you get further into one round, you get more and more currency to use on various weapons here. So that's been pretty interesting to see. At the same time, I'm not very good at it at all. Like, I am always like one kill, 15 deaths and like, you know, 3 assists. And, I know that I'm not helping out the teams that I've been a part of, but, you know, I've been having fun for what it's been, except that, you know, it's pretty clear that I suck and all of my teammates know that. So yeah, hopefully I can find a human team soon. But aside from that, it's been rough there. I've also been playing a little bit of Roblox just because I wanted to check it out and see how it's been over the last few years. For those of you somehow unfamiliar with Roblox, like, this game is like all the rage with kids these days, just because it's one of those things where it's, you have all these free games at your disposal and it's pretty much limitless to see what you can do here. Roblox is playable on mobile platforms as well as a console. And, like, yeah, it's really grown. I remember when it was first made, like, I don't know, back in 2015, maybe even before then, it was really just a sandbox game. And now it's kind of like, its own platform. You know, we talked about the news a few weeks ago where people are actually hiring people to, like, work at IKEA for Roblox or something. And I'm like, okay, yeah, they're doing some interesting things, and that's why their stock is the way it is, so that's pretty cool. I played a little bit of the Concord beta, and so far it's been nice. I totally relate with the rest of the world that thinks this was pretty much Guardians of the Galaxy with a different kind of label. But yeah, it's been fun so far. It's interesting how all the modes they put you in are pretty much random, and you pretty much just find your comfort that way. But yeah, it's been nice in that regard. I don't know how it's performing ever since it went into the public beta space. But yeah, it's definitely a game that I found enjoyable. But I don't know if I'll be playing this one anymore. I'm looking forward to Marvel Rivals, which is going to be in beta next week, and I was invited to that already, so I'll be hopping onto that one soon. Last week, and I started Spy X Anya Operation Memories. You know, I talked about it last week. And yeah, so like this one is interesting because, you know, it's it's about the Spy Family anime, and it's definitely one of the more wholesome animes available. But at the same time, I wouldn't say it's exactly for kids, just because there are some episodes that are super violent. But the game is definitely targeted at kids. All you do is you go through the various maps there are in the game, and you find places to take pictures. And the gameplay element is really just finding the focus, finding the right angle, and taking a picture at just the right time. So, you know, I talked about Pokemon Snap earlier. This is one. This one is definitely near that one as well. But it's definitely more. it's just not that interesting. Just because a lot of it is really just using Anya to, you know, go to random places, and you can only take like two or three photos at one place at a time, and then you go into the next phase. So, you know, day begins. She goes to school. And then when she goes to school, she can talk to, the second son. She can talk to her best friend. She can talk to the teacher. And then after that, you find two photos to take a picture with. And then all of a sudden, you go home, you have dinner, and you play mini games. And the mini games are actually pretty cool. Obviously, some are better than others. Some of the ones I had more fun with are when you use Lloyd Forger, who's the spy in the family, and pretty much you. Are in this museum examining paintings for this stealth segment. Another one is where you use Yor, the assassin, and it pretty much just turns into an action-based Musou from there. And, you know, these are all timed, and they grade you based on how well you do. And it's really easy to get an S on almost everything. The one thing that I'm having trouble with is this dodgeball game, because I don't really know what you're supposed to be doing here. Like, there hasn't been a point where I lost in the dodgeball game, but I haven't been able to get a good rating for it either. And the worst part of all this is the minigames are really just there for no reason. They're just there to pass the time. There are no achievements tied to these minigames at all. The only reason why you'll need them is so you can use them as use the currency you get from them to buy outfits. And the outfits don't really do much. They'll do things like make Anya walk faster or, you know, that kind of thing. But for the most part, they're just cosmetic. And again, there's also no achievement tied to them. So in full honesty, the reason why I'm playing this game is so I can get an easy platinum. But it also will take a long time. And this is not something I binge, you know. I definitely say this game is a fine waste of time for people who are fans of the show. But if you don't like Spy Family at all, you probably shouldn't use a pay time for this one. But yeah, the last game I'm playing is Nintendo World Championships NES Edition. This game came out on Thursday, and I bought two of the special editions just because they're awesome. I don't know if any of you like got it yourselves, but it's pretty cool. So in the box, it's a really, really nice box, by the way, and nice and well built. Mine didn't come with any dents. It came with a bunch of pins with a nice gold finish, you know, celebrating the World Championships. It came with a whole bunch of flyer-looking postcards for every game that's featured in there. So, you know, there's Balloon Fight, there's Mario Brothers 1, 2, and 3. There's Excitebike. Yeah, it's a whole bunch. There's also this nice gold cartridge. And, and then there's the game. So the special edition only costs about $60, which is, you know, what you spend for just about any Nintendo game. And, yeah, it's pretty cool to see. As for the game itself, I've been playing the game with my brother, so, you know, I've definitely been competitive in that regard. And the cool thing about it is, when you play the various, like, tournaments that they have in the game, they'll tell you how long you'll be spending with them. So the easier ones will be, you know, no more than 4 minutes. And then when you do things that are a little bit more hard, you'll spend around 10 to 15 minutes on them. So an example for something that's easy in 4 minutes would be, okay, so in Mario Brothers 3, you just get the mushroom. Mario Brothers 1, get the mushroom. And Mario Brothers 2, get the mushroom. So it's basically all about mushrooms. And, you know, you just want to be able to get them as quickly as possible. And my main feedback so far is, you know, if you really want things to be fair, you definitely want to be playing with, like, the same kind of controller. So I've been playing with a Pro Controller. My brother has been playing with the Joy-Cons. And, yeah, like, I'm the older brother. You know, I've had the NES. A lot of the nostalgia resonates with me. And, like, seeing him beat me in ways where I was like, wait, why was I too slow here? And it's because the control pad, in my opinion, on the Pro Controller hasn't really been utilized well. So I don't know if it's a Joy-Con thing. But, yeah, I think next time we play, we're going to use the NES controllers to see how much better it feels. And it was funny, like when we were doing one of the harder rounds, which basically just allow you to beat the first level out of like every game listed. So there was one where, you know, you want to beat 1-1 of Super Mario Brothers, and he beat me last minute somehow. There was another one where you want to beat the first level of Ice Climbers, and I've never played Ice Climbers in my life, so I didn't realize how archaic it was to actually jump and move at the same time. So, you know, with Ice Climbers, the object of the game is to get to the top of the mountain, and you do that by, you know, breaking blocks that are in your jumping path. So you jump and you jump and you jump, but the hard part is when you jump, it's really hard to move left or right from there. And it gave me another appreciation for Super Smash Brothers. You know, like the Ice Climbers are in that game, and when you use your B-up availability or your B-up ability, you can't really move left or right from there. And I was like, okay, I totally get it. It's because it's impossible to do in the original game. So good job on that, Sakurai. But as far as the World Championships goes, I'm definitely enjoying it so far. I just need to spend a little bit more time on it. But yeah, most of my time is definitely being spent on Kunitsugami. So yeah, that's about it for me.
All right, yeah, we got plenty of stuff to talk about there. So that's
yes, we
good.
Do.
We got some news here, and let's start getting to some stuff you can check out. First up, mm-hmm. No Man's Sky has a big new update called Worlds Part 1. Mm. Essentially, their 5.0 update that kind of does a big overhaul of the planets in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
As they're doing some big upgrades to the water and cloud visuals, and increasing planet diversity with new gameplay features and such. So we got another big page with tons of stuff they're talking about. Part of this is also going to be a big expedition, community expedition that you can do that's very much sounds like Helldivers 2. As they talk about here, engage in a galactic bug hunt in No Man's Sky's 14th community expedition. A vile brood is spreading corruption across the universe. Mm-hmm. Join the Liquidator Vanguard to do your part and purge the rot from the stars. So, yeah, shooting some bug creatures there, so that's pretty cool. With a bunch of special rewards for that stuff, so you can check that out. Let's see. They allow you to rename stuff you've discovered and already submitted. So that's good. So you can go back and give them new names. Worlds have been transformed, particularly you're talking about here some gravitational distortions that have created these floating islands. So not so much just the like floating chunks of rock or whatever that you see on some planets. These are more dramatic, like floating island kind of stuff that looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So that's neat. They do volumetric clouds. They've done a big overhaul of that stuff. Especially having them be darker when they're going to rain. So that's cool. You got some more options for Starship Fabricator. You can craft solar class starships. So that's cool. More detailed shadows. That's good. They got a little thing to drag it across the image to see how it looks before and after. The change. Big upgrade to the water, what they're showing here. Maybe it looks a bit more like maybe Sea of Thieves water kind of thing, so that's cool. More new types of creatures, and I assume pieces to make them out of. Like stamen-like whiskers, petal-like faces, a bunch of other stuff like that. Full wind simulation. More dynamic water. So that's cool. The Liquidator combat mech. New big mech suit, so that's cool. Sub-Zero worlds. Frozen worlds have been transformed with isolated trees and glittering glacial rocks. And I'm maybe like 30% through this page. Then a big overhaul of a lot of the worlds, so well worth kind of going back to the game to check it out and see how that stuff looks, because it looks pretty well done. So that's cool. I was playing a little bit of that earlier today, as like testing out the PS5, and it still looks really good.
All right.
There you go. Big update there.
Yep.
Evo's been happening, and this seems like the one big announcement. That SNK is releasing SNK versus Capcom SVC Chaos. It's out now on PC and will be out on PS4, Switch, and GOG on PC on July 22nd, on Tuesday. Monday, that would be. So yeah, let's what is this? This was an arcade release in 2003 before being ported to the Neo Geo, the PS2, and Xbox within the next year or so after that. So yeah, that's one of the SNK Capcom crossover games. So that's neat for the people that like those games. So yeah, there you go. I think it's $20. Could be wrong. But there you go for that. Also available this week on a Tuesday, Case of the Golden Idols finally coming to PlayStation, PS5 and PS4. So you can check that out before Rise of the Golden Idol comes out later this year. I think it's still scheduled for later this year. I definitely recommend it. So there's DLC as well with two extra campaigns that are worth checking out. So yeah. Very good game. Especially like your kind of deductive adventure game kind of stuff. You're kind of very much looking at all the evidence and details you have to try to figure out, you know, who everybody is and various other details and figure out the events that happened to somebody or multiple people being killed. So there you go for that. And the last date, or no, the second to last date we have here, Just Crow Things is coming out August 15th for Xbox, Switch, and PC. And will be out on PS5 and PS4 later on, hopefully later this year. But yeah, that's one of the games that Dan Rip really liked at the, what was it, Anime Expo? Or was it Summer Game Fest?
Not sure.
But yeah, those will be out here in a few weeks, so you can check that out. And then, yeah, we got details here on what that Emio teaser was teasing. And that's a new Famicom Detective Club game that's titled Emio the Smiling Man. That is M-rated. That'll be out August 29th. So, yeah, that'll be, I believe, a full-price game for that. But, yeah, that's... it's interesting they're kind of making a full new title in that for a little series that we never got until the remakes of the two of the original games that we got a couple years ago on the Switch. So, yeah, as I say here, in Emio, the Smelling Man of Famicom Detective Club, a student has been found dead in a chilling fashion, his head covered with a paper bag with an eerie smiling face drawn on it. This unsettling visage bears a striking resemblance to a recurring clue in a string of unsolved murders from 18 years ago, as well as Emio, the Smiling Man, a killer of urban legend who is said to grant his victims a smile that will last forever. So yeah, there you go.
All right. Yeah, so I'm actually pretty, honestly, kind of psyched that Nintendo is intent on not keeping this as just like a nostalgia thing. They want the Famicom Detective Club thing to actually still keep going, apparently. Because I'm guessing that the remakes that they did recently were successful enough that they were given the go-ahead to make a new game. So, you know, the fact that Nintendo is willing to, you know, experiment like that is... honestly, a credit to them, because most other major game publisher, you know, like Nintendo, would not be willing to take that kind of risk.
Yeah. But yeah, this looks like it'll be a $49.99 game. So be able to check that out here in about a month. So yeah, there you go. Their first mature rated game in a while. So there you go. But yeah, speaking of Nintendo, a number of developers from the Chibi Robo team have formed a new team called Tiny Wonder Studio that they are working on essentially a similar kind of game called Ko-Robo, K-O-Robo, a new action-adventure game that follows a new pint-sized robot named Korobo and his owner, Tom. They'll be having a Kickstarter and a campfire campaign sometime soon with the goal of launching on consoles and PC. So that'll be cool to see. That's a franchise that Nintendo really hasn't done much with over the years. I think there was the GameCube game and then like a 3DS game that's kind of wasn't similar, all that similar to it. So it was more of a side-scrolling kind of thing. But that'd be cool to see a new game similar to that. See how that does. So yeah, there you go.
All right.
And, yeah, let's see here. Devolver Digital has announced that they are publishing the new game from Skeleton Crew Studio, makers of Allegia, which was also published by Devolver Digital. They're calling this a tactical kung fu game. It's coming to the Switch and PC. No date for it just yet, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it actually looks really neat. It weirdly enough, because of the art style, it reminds me a lot of Karateka, although I'm pretty sure it's meant to be slightly different than that. But yeah, it looks really cool.
Yeah, got a, let's see, a roguelike game loop. So yeah, you're kind of encouraged to experiment with its mechanics and fighting and all that. So that's cool. We'll see when that finally releases, but yeah, that's a pretty new looking game. And then back to Nintendo with the Switch 2 on the horizon. Nintendo finally announced standalone Joy-Con chargers, a charging dock of sorts. Yeah, that seems similar to the what is it? It was like a version of the like grips that you could get it launched for the Switch that were basically able to charge through that. Although the one that came with the Switch itself did not allow that. So that's something that's, finally available for everybody, because I assume they're doing this from one of the pictures they showed. It allows you a way to charge those NES Joy-Con controllers outside of having to plug it into a Switch for the Nintendo World Championships game they just released, as well as I'm assuming that that means that Joy-Cons will be compatible with the new Switch. It seems likely if they're allowing this kind of stuff to be released at this point.
Yeah,
I pretty much had the same sentiment, because, like, you know, it's just a weird Nintendo decision to just have this release at this time when, you know, they're almost done. And just real quick, I was away from my desk when we talked about the Emio thing, but, you know, it's kind of weird for like the internet to just go frazzled about that one too, because Nintendo is not gonna release a brand new IP with, like, you know, mature themes at this point of the stage either. But, like, you know, having this announcement with the Joy-Cons just makes you think maybe it was possible. But yeah, I mean, aside from that, I was also a fan of the FDC remix, and I'm looking forward to that one coming out. And as for this thing, I don't know if I'll buy it, but, you know, if the new Switch ends up using the same technology to charge their whatever they want to use as Joy-Cons or controllers, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to see how this fits into the Switch 2 or whatever they're going to call it, but it seems like they're still going to wait a good bit to announce that thing, probably in the fall at some point. But yeah. There you go for that. But let's get to some good news on the sales front. The Ironwood Studios Pacific Drive, they have announced that it has reached 600,000 copies sold, which is pretty great for that kind of game. It's out on PS5 and PC. As a sort of driving survival roguelite kind of game.
It's a very hard game to describe, but it is very enjoyable. It will basically turn you into a kleptomaniac, though, like, just straight up, because you will straight up be grabbing every single thing you can get your hands on in that game to desperately keep your car together.
yep so yeah That's very good news. So
yeah,
that's great. And then yeah, as I alluded to earlier, College Football 25 has done very well, as EA has announced that they have reached 2.2 million players during its early access period, as well as an additional 600,000 players through the EA Play trial. So that's pretty great numbers for them for a game that's only on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, and no PC version or last gen versions. Should mean a very strong launch here for that game. So that's great. Hopefully they take this as an opportunity to kind of keep working on it and make it a better game, because it's very rough around the edges for a lot of it.
Yeah. Congrats to EA Sports for pulling that off. You know, I've known a lot of people who were working on that game for a while, so seeing it and seeing them enjoy this early success is pretty cool. And like, you know, another thing to keep in mind is that for this early access, you know, you had to pay $90, you know, way over $100 as far as added taxes go to play this game, you know, whether it be early and even if they were not including a lot of features. But yeah, that's part of the hype machine. Again, like, this is the first time college football has been back in over 10 years, and it just goes to show that people have been waiting. And, you know, you got to point out that this game is only available in the current gen. So I've heard a bunch of stories from people who were standing around in GameStop thinking that they'd be able to get it for Xbox 360. And like, no, you're two console generations behind, man. So, yeah, like, this is also proving to be a system seller as well. And, yeah, it just goes to show, like, how powerful the college football name can be, even without the NCAA license. So. Cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, there you go on that front. And we got two more legal bits of news. Yeah, the FTC has taken issue with the new Game Pass tiers and price increases as part of its whole challenge of the Xbox acquisition of Activision Blizzard. They have filed a new statement here. Yeah, and they're filing the, let's see, they blast Microsoft's discontinuation of Game Pass for console, saying that users must pay a substantial price increase, 81%, switch to Game Pass Ultimate. Those unwilling to do so must settle for Game Pass Standard, which the FTC describes as a degraded product since it excludes day one passes. Game Pass Standard costs 36% more than console Game Pass, and withholds day one releases. Product degradation, removing the most valuable games from Microsoft's new service, combined with price increases for existing users, is exactly the sort of consumer harm from the merger the FTC has alleged. Yeah. As Microsoft, I think, responded and is like, it's actually a better value because it includes online multiplayer. And it's like, I don't really know about that part of it, but it's at least sort of getting that as a universal feature set of Game Pass versus what it was kind of before, where Game Pass couldn't necessarily take advantage of the full feature set of every game that was in it, because you could not play the multiplayer without having a gold Xbox Live Gold subscription, or then, you know, I think you could not get it any other way now without just upgrading to Ultimate or getting the core tier, which then didn't include the big library. So, yeah, I definitely see their case here, but I don't know if there's going to be any sort of actual challenge outside of just calling this out as part of the thing, especially kind of weird when you realized back at their Summer Game Fest presentation that they made a big deal of Black Ops 3, Black Ops 6 being on Game Pass day one, and then removed the cheapest tier that would get you that game 3 weeks later. Not 3 weeks, like within a month and a half of that announcement.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm not defending Microsoft in any way, but, you know, going back to what we said last week, you know, this is something that was going to happen, considering they tried more than a year ago. And yeah, like, they were able to like prolong it a little bit, but yeah, it was going to happen. So it just kind of it kind of feels weird to have the FTC once again get involved. I know that you know they're getting involved primarily because of like their opposition with the Activision Blizzard acquisition, but this doesn't affect anything. This has nothing to do with that, and it almost feels like the FTC is out to get them. And you know, again, I'm not defending Microsoft at all, but look at Netflix, look at Hulu, look at Disney Plus. They have all had crazy price increases over the last 3 years, and that's part of the reason why they aren't as popular as they were when they first, you know, came out. Well, Hulu arguably is, but you know that goes without saying. But yeah, like you know, if the FTC wants to go get Microsoft for this again, well, why not Netflix? Why not Disney Plus? Like they are way more expensive today than they were 2 years ago. So I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go on that front.
All right.
But yeah, the last one here is actually a good story. We don't usually end on good stories, but Sega in Japan had a big issue that, posting on its corporate site on July 17th, Sega released a statement outlining a recent case in Japan where it sued an individual who had, the publisher says, made excessive, slanderous, and insulting comments on social media against one of our employees for a long time. Then, yeah, kind of sounding like a very disappointed dad, saying, as there had been no improvement, we have been forced to take legal action. Highlighting the difference between what is tolerated in the U.S. and Japan, courts agreed that the offender's personal information should be disclosed to Sega, which then got in direct contact with the troll and, through quote-unquote negotiating, arrived at a settlement. The individual unidentified by Sega will pay unspecified damages to the employee, as well as delete the slanderous and insulting comments and refrain from such actions in the future. But yeah, as a result of the settlement, kind of Sega dealing with them outside of the court system, they are refusing to post any personal information of who this was or anything like that. So yeah, they're kind of just keeping it under wraps, since you know they want to essentially move this behind them, which is probably the right idea here. But Sega managed to deal with a very aggressive troll that was harassing and slandering one particular employee of theirs, and managed to get a good win out of that. So that is great to see companies standing up for their employees. So there you go.
Yeah, it's probably best that they just squash this right away. I mean, like, speaking as a, you know, community manager that's worked in the industry for 7 years, like, working in gaming is not easy. And, you know, not only do you have to deal with shareholders, you know, sometimes difficult coworkers, but you also have to deal with the actual asshole gamers, and that's not fun. And you know, good for Sega to, you know, stand out in front of their employees to get this kind of thing done, because there's no place for it. Don't be an asshole.
Yep. So yeah, that is going to do it for the show this week. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and select games to talk about. We probably have plenty more to talk about next week.
Oh, yeah.
As we get some more time to the games that have been coming out. Let's see what else is coming out here this month. Yeah, there's the free-to-play game, the new Denpa-men on the Switch. Star named Eos, and Earth Defense Force 6 as well coming out. So huge games, but still some interesting stuff there. Among other things that have been dated for this week. But that'll be it for the show. Thank you, everybody that listens. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers who are also excited for college football video games to be back. Thank you all for tuning in. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.